The thing that they're not talking about is this past spring, NASA launched a much larger, much more sophisticated solar satellite, and we're not seeing anything from that, and we know that's up there. So it's not like they are without data. They're shutting down SOHO or whatever. Maybe there is a real problem with SOHO, but the situation is there is another bird up there with much greater capabilities, and we're not seeing anything from that, and nobody's talking about it.
Do you think, though, that they could point Hubble out that way and see something?
Oh, absolutely. Out in the south, and absolutely. That new big telescope that they put in about a year ago, it's about the size of your refrigerator, or a small refrigerator. That camera was designed to see local planetary-type objects. It was not for galactic or distant deep space work. It was for high detail on solar system objects.
Your thoughts are, James, that these comets that have gotten close to the planet since the beginning of time are probably what has probably caused more havoc than asteroids or anything else?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. A direct collision is very rare. With the amount of things that are floating around now. But a near miss is much more probable when you have something big. And as in the case with Venus, it was a guaranteed near miss because it was in the plane of the planets. Its tail drag was causing its orbit to circularize and become smaller. And so as it was captured by Jupiter into the plane of the planets, we were guaranteed that sometime in the future, Earth was going to encounter that comet.
Now, you're not alone in these theories, are you?
Well, no. There's, I would say I was the person that introduced the theoretical structure of how comets work and how they are not dirty snowballs. And I believe a number of people have certainly are supporting this work.
What do you mean by dirty snowball?
Well, the standard story for a comet is that they are dirty snowballs, and.
But what's a dirty snowball? You mean just full of dirt and all that stuff?
Yeah, it's a small, usually a few miles across rock with some snow on it, and of course with the space probes that have gone out to, for example, Deep Space One, which went to Comet Borealy, found no ice, no water. It's a hot, dry rock.
Yeah, it looks like an asteroid.
Yeah, and the same, I just pulled an article today. I was looking at it from Comet Halley back in the mid-80s, or what, 86, 87 time frame, when Giotto, the French spacecraft, went right by the nucleus, and they saw the same thing. It was a hot, black, dry rock.
Well, what causes the tail to light up?
It's a influx of material caused by an electric field that builds up around the comet nucleus.
And does that build up as it keeps going?
Yes, and it's drawn in by electrical forces into the nucleus. The situation is that most of it is water from hydrogen and oxygen combining from the solar environment. But most of this in a small comet then blows away as neutrals. And this fools cometary scientists into thinking that that is an ice ball that's deliquescing or sublimating in the solar wind. But the reality is the big comets can hold this material and they grow. And the bigger comets grow by a tremendous amount. That's why the big comets change their orbits radically, and the ancients called them the lawless ones.
Now, there are some astronomers, many of them, who think Velikovsky was nuts, that his theory is just literally doesn't hold water. But you stand by what he says, don't you?
Well, yeah, and the situation is most astronomers today are in total denial of the facts. The facts are that comets are not dirty snowballs, and literally the theories that are being taught in astronomy textbooks are incorrect.
Well, if that's correct, what you just say, that that comets are not dirty snowballs, what does that then do to Velikovsky's theories and other theories about what comets are and their effect on this planet?
Well, basically, the astronomers were proving Velikovsky wrong, so to speak, with incorrect theories. And today, if you look at my theoretical work, it shows how comets become larger and the very large ones can become planets or moons of the solar system, and that the solar system is growing by a method called capture. And so it's a constantly evolving solar system. It's not stagnant. It didn't form all at one time. In fact, that's one of the situations with the new comet model, which I call the plasma discharge comet model. Literally, there's a domino effect that occurs with the traditional theories. If comets aren't dirty snowballs and melting away and becoming bigger, then the planets didn't all form at one time, which is one of the cornerstones of modern astronomy. And then you have the electrical nature of the solar system. Modern astronomers say there is no electrical nature to the solar system. So there's a domino principle that occurs here, and the traditional theories are literally replaced by an entire new set of theories. And that's what I've done. And it took a lot of homework to do this. You don't just do this overnight, and it's not something you do casually.
Velikovsky, of course, is dead now, but in the 50s, started this controversy by his book, Worlds in Collision. How did he come up with these theories? What happened to him in order for him to, at least feel Venus was a comet and captured and things like that?
The first thing to understand is Velikovsky was not dealing with astronomy or science or anything remotely close to it. He was working with calendars. And his goal as an archaeologist, which basically a psychologist, archaeologist, and anthropologist, he was looking for a timeline in history with an event so major and on an earthwide scale that every culture in ancient times would recognize this, and then as a calendar restructuring, you would take that as a zero timeline. You could go forward and backwards in each country, which were, by the way, totally separate culturally at the time. If you look at, say, China and Tibet and versus the Mideast and other cultures, Mesoamerica, those cultures were totally unattached.
Was he a genius?
He was extremely intelligent, and the biggest problem is most people, astronomers who have actually read his books, most astronomers have not read his books, but most astronomers who read his books don't even understand what he's talking about or what he was doing.
And I heard that book, Worlds in Collision, reached number one on the bestsellers list and then was banned from most academic institutions because it was too much of a scientific controversy.
It affected geology, biology, evolutionary biology, astronomy, physics, astrophysics. And so I found that the pecking order in most big universities is from the physics and astronomy departments on down. And there's kind of a thing where they very much force their beliefs on the other departments. So what you find today is that nobody can change. They're all locked into these structures, all assuming that the astronomy community is correct about, say, the dirty snowball theory and the other methods of formation of the solar system.